smoke left the hotel through the back door and hurried along the alley between the two rows of buildings. His gaze darted from side to side, constantly searching for any signs of danger. He had to cross a street to get to the block where Longmont Saloon was located. Gunfire from up ahead drew his attention to a shed at the rear of a property on the next street over. Two warriors made a dash from the shed toward the rear door of the saloon. Shots from a window in the saloon building dropped one of the renegades. The other whirled back and sought the shed's cover again. Smoke's Colt roared and knocked the warrior into a rolling sprawl. Movement on the roof caught his eye. One of the renegades was on the roof and had a blazing torch in his hand. He had his back to Smoke as he was about to set fire to the building's false front. The Colt angled up. The torch wielder arched his back as the bullet struck him from behind. He came up on his toes and tottered forward, then dropped the torch and slid down out of sight.
The torch is still burning up there.
Smoke holstered the Colt, looked around, and spotted several empty crates stacked against the rear wall of the saloon. Quickly, he rearranged the crates so that he could climb on top of them, and that brought him in reach of the rain gutter that ran along the back edge of the roof. He stretched his arms up, caught hold of the gutter, and hauled himself up onto the peaked roof. The exertion made his cut arm ache. A thread of blood trickled down his side where the lance had scraped him too. Smoke ignored the pain and scrambled to his feet. He hurried along the roof slope. The wooden shingles on the roof were starting to catch fire, as were the boards of the false front. Smoke reached for the torch so he could fling it into the street and then put out the flames. But before he could grasp it, a couple of bullets exploded up through the roof and narrowly missed him.
Blast it! They must have heard my footsteps and mistaken me for a renegade.
He threw himself backwards as more shots came through the roof. Then, circling that spot, he cat-footed toward the torch, moving quietly enough that he hoped those down below wouldn't hear him this time. He reached the burning brand, grabbed it, and threw it well over the top of the false front so it would clear the awning over the boardwalk and drop into the street where it could burn out harmlessly. Then he whipped off his torn and bloody shirt and used it to beat out the flames. That left the roof and the false front charred here and there, but not really damaged seriously. The threat of Longmont's turning into a blazing inferno was thwarted, but only for a moment. A flaming arrow arched down out of the sky, missed him by several feet, and lodged at an upright angle in the roof. Smoke lunged, caught hold of the shaft, and tugged it free before the flames could catch. He tossed the burning arrow into the alley at the side of the building, hoping it would go out harmlessly down there. He had barely done that when another fire arrow thudded onto the roof behind him. As he turned toward it, the defenders inside the building started shooting through the roof again. Grimacing, Smoke snatched up the second arrow and threw it off the building. A slug punched upward through the roof about an inch from his right foot. He sprang to the window that was built into the false front and peered through the opening. He spotted one of the renegades on the roof of the building opposite Longmont's. The warrior had another arrow knocked in a flame, and he was leaning back as he prepared to launch it on its arching flight across the street. Smoke drew the Colt, knelt to steady himself, and lined up the shot in less than the blink of an eye. Nerveless fingers released the bowstring. The blazing arrow flew almost straight up in the air, slowing until it finally stopped, twisted, and plummeted back down as gravity took over. It landed on the roof of the same building from which it had been fired. Smoke lowered himself over the edge, feet first, and hung by his hands for a second before dropping the rest of the way into the side alley. A few steps brought him to the front corner. Lead was still storming back and forth across the street in a deadly barrage.
No way I'll be able to get in through the front.
He had just turned toward the back of the saloon when he heard horses. Black Drum and the rest of his renegades could be trying a last-ditch mounted attack, but Smoke wasn't sure there were that many of them left. He had lost track of how many he'd killed since he'd reached Big Rock, but he knew he must have whittled down the war party a tad. He sprang to the alley mouth and looked to the west where the hoofbeats thundered. A group of blue uniformed troops galloped along Center Street with Captain Adam Skinner at their head.
Skinner's about to lead his men right into that crossfire.
Smoke did not like or trust any of those so-called troopers. Didn't believe they were the real thing and was convinced they were outlaws. But that didn't mean he was going to stand aside and watch while they were slaughtered. Even Skinner. Despite the danger in which he was putting himself, Smoke dashed into the street and waved his arms to get Skinner's attention. Skinner saw him all right. The captain's features twisted into a hate-filled scowl. He yanked his revolver from its holster and galloped straight at Smoke, flames spurting from the muzzle of his gun as he fired.
Jensen!
Smoke dove aside. Skinner was not going to pass up this chance to kill him. Smoke knew that now, and he had no choice. He hit the dirt, rolled, and came up on one knee with a Colt in his hand. Skinner went backward off his horse as the bullets plowed into him. That shot the troopers with him into yanking back on their reins, which saved their lives because they were about to be caught in the crossfire. At that moment, howling in fury, a dozen renegades burst out of the building where they'd taken cover. It was on fire now from the flaming arrow that had gone straight up and then back down to land on the roof. Black smoke curled from the shot-out windows. The Indians opened fire on the troopers, who reacted instinctively despite their shock at seeing Skinner shot off his horse. They returned the fire, and defenders in Longmont Saloon blasted away at the renegades, too. The Indians no longer had any hope of winning. Smoke knew they just wanted to die in battle. All but one, who darted in a different direction. As he did so, the small drum hanging from a sling around his shoulder swung out so that Smoke could see it.
Black Drum.
And he was running away, abandoning the warriors he had led on that long, bloody-handed trail of slaughter. Smoke charged after him. Black Drum ducked into an alley. Smoke followed.
Black Drum, turn and face me.
Black Drum stopped short and turned. His hand strayed to the drum at his waist. He stared at Smoke and grinned. His other hand flashed toward his waist. Smoke felt the wind rip of the bullet past his left ear as he triggered the Colt. The hammer clicked harmlessly on an empty chamber.
Oh, four.
Black Drum pulled the trigger on his gun again, but rage and frustration appeared on his face as it failed to fire too. It was as empty as Smoke's gun. Black Drum threw the revolver aside and charged at Smoke. Smoke shoved his Colt back into his holster and met the war chief's attack. They came together like two titans, grappling and heaving and slugging. The sweat and dust that covered their torsos made it difficult for either man to get and maintain a grip as they staggered back and forth in the alley. Then, Black Drum stuck his foot between Smoke's calves and tangled their legs together. Smoke fell heavily, but on his way down, he grabbed the rawhide sling by which the drum hung at the war chief's waist and dragged Black Drum down with it.
Hide you!
With dust filling his mouth and nose and sweat dripping into his eyes and stinging him so he could hardly see, Smoke hooked his left arm around Black Drum's shoulders and heaved, so the war chief wound up lying on top of him. Smoke still held the rawhide sling in his right hand. He looped the slack around Black Drum's neck and started revolving his wrist, twisting and tightening the cord. Black Drum tried to writhe away from him, but Smoke's other arm clamped around him like a band of iron and kept him from escaping. Black Drum kicked his legs and tried to hit Smoke, but he was in an awkward position and couldn't get any power behind the blow. Smoke wrapped his own legs around the renegade's lower limbs and clung tighter to him as he increased the pressure. Black Drum bucked and heaved. Smoke killed on like he was sticking to the saddle of a wild bronc that didn't want to be ridden. Black Drum waved his arms in the air, but the movements became more feeble as he weakened. After several more moments, the renegade's muscles went limp. His arms and legs fell and didn't move again. Smoke didn't ease up on the pressure, not one single ounce. He kept it up, holding on for all the innocent people this madman and his followers had slaughtered. He felt it when Black Drum's chest stopped rising and falling, but still, he didn't let go. Not until several minutes had passed and he was absolutely certain that the war chief was dead. With a shudder, Smoke released the rawhide sling and shoved the limp corpse off of it. He rolled away from it and climbed wearily to his feet.
Smoke!
He looked up and his heart leaped as high as Pike's Peak when he saw Sally running toward him. A sudden burst of energy fueled by the sight of his wife revitalized him and he hurried forward to meet her. She rushed into his arms and he clasped her tightly to him, heedless of the dirt and the sweat that covered him. Sally buried her face against his bare shoulder and he filled his nostrils with the sweet scent of her hair.
Oh, Smoke, you're bleeding.
You mean these?
He nodded toward the shallow cut on his forearm and even shallower cut on his side.
These are just scratches. Nothing to worry about.
You sure?
Positive. Now that I can see that you're all right, I'm as fine as can be.
She leaned slightly to the side to look past him.
Is he?
It's Black Drum, all right. And he's dead.
Smoke lifted his head and listened. No more shots rang out over Big Rock. Instead, an almost eerie silence had descended over the settlement.
I reckon it's all over now. At last.
Oh, it was so awful. All the shooting and killing. Oh, but the worst part of it was wondering if you were all right.
He put his hand under her chin and lifted her head so he could grin at her.
I was feeling the exact same way about you. What about Monty and Lewis? Are either of them hurt?
They both got nicked by bullets. It was almost impossible not to, with so much lead flying around. But neither of them are badly hurt at all.
How'd you manage to avoid all those bullets?
Well...
Sally grinned and indicated a couple of torn places on the sleeves of her dress.
I almost didn't. Hi.
Mrs. Jensen, step away from your husband.
Colonel Lamar Talbot strode toward him with four of the so-called troopers at his back. There was nothing phony about the rifles the men pointed at Smoke, though.
Colonel, what are you doing?
Move aside.
Talbot aimed the gun in his hand at Smoke.
I won't tell you again.
You better think twice about what you're doing, Colonel.
I don't have to think twice, Jensen. I know exactly what I'm doing. I'm placing you under arrest for the murder of Adam Skinner.
Oh, that's insane.
Truly, Mrs. Jensen, this is your last warning.
Sally turned to face Talbot. Smoke put his hands on her shoulders and gently but firmly moved her aside out of the line of fire.
Stay there. There's no telling what these varmints might do.
But Smoke...
I agree with my wife, Colonel. Claiming that I murdered Skinner is plumb loco.
I witnessed it with my own eyes. Captain Skinner was attacking the renegades in a valiant charge, and you coldly and deliberately shot him off his horse, killing him.
He was shooting at me. I reckon I've had enough people try to ventilate me that I know when I'm the target.
Yes, I'm aware that you have quite a reputation as a gunman and an outlaw. But that doesn't change the facts of the matter. Big Rock is under martial law, so you'll have a military trial presided over by me.
So you'll be judge, jury, and star witness? Or the only witness?
A number of troops saw you murder Captain Skinner, and I'm sure all of them will be happy to testify to that fact. Your trial will be legal and above board, Jensen. And so will your execution. A firing squad would be most appropriate, I think.
You'll never get away with this. And since when was martial law declared?
During the battle with the Renegades, of course. I've sent men to inform Sheriff Carson that he no longer has any authority in the town, and to spread word to the other citizens as well that I'm now in charge.
Smoke saw what was going on. Now that the threat from the Renegades was over, Talbot was moving quickly to strengthen his grip on the settlement. In the aftermath of battle with the townspeople still in a state of shock, Big Rock would be ripe for looting. Talbot probably still had enough men to get away with it, too. A couple of dozen ruthless killers were enough to tree a town the size of Big Rock. Some of the male citizens had clashed with Indians and outlaws before, but hell, the only truly seasoned fighting men were Smoke, Monty, and Lewis. And Pearly, Smoke suddenly recalled. If Pearly was on the loose, there was still a chance of turning the tables on Talbot, although Smoke couldn't try that at the moment, not with Sally and the rest of the townspeople potentially in the line of fire. As much as it galled him, he had to play along with Talbot's madness for now.
All right, Colonel. I surrender.
He turned to Sally and rested his hands on her shoulders. Holding his head so that Talbot and the troopers couldn't see his left eye, he let that lid droop in a meaningful wink. Although Sally's horrified expression didn't alter, he saw understanding flicker in her eyes.
It'll be all right, honey. I have to cooperate with the Colonel. I'm sure all this misunderstanding will get hashed out before much longer.
Very soon indeed. I see no reason why your trial can't be held as soon as order is fully restored in the town. As early as this evening, perhaps. In the meantime,
Talbot turned to the troopers.
Lacking a proper military stockade, take Mr. Jensen to the local jail and see that he is locked up. And while you're at it, lock up Sheriff Carson, too, so that he can't attempt to interfere with us.
You figure you've got Big Rock in the palm of your hand, don't you?
Not just the palm. I've closed that hand into a fist. An iron fist that will never let go.
The next couple of hours as the afternoon waned were extremely frustrating to Smoke. With at least four rifles covering him at all times, Talbot's men had marched him to the sheriff's office and jail and then prodded him into one of the cells. Smoke had been locked up before, but he hadn't liked it then and he didn't cotton to it now. The clang of the cell door closing was almost like a knife in his guts. A short time later, more troopers brought in Monty Carson. Monty was groggy with a swollen lump on his head. Somebody must have walloped him, probably with a rifle butt. He had a soldier on each side of him holding him up. They half shoved, half dragged him into the cell block and pitched him in one of the cells. He rolled across the floor and came to a stop near the bunk.
Put up a fight when you came for him, didn't he? I'm not surprised.
Nor was I.
Lewis Longmont entered the cell block, too, with three troopers around him.
I tried to persuade these gentlemen that it would be unwise to take the sheriff and myself into custody, but they weren't inclined to listen.
Lewis's handsome face was bruised and scratched from the struggle. The troopers put Lewis in another cell, leaving only one empty. But as long as Pearly stayed out of that last cell, they still had a chance, Smoke told himself. When the troopers were gone, Smoke went to the door of his cell and grasped the iron bars as he looked across at Lewis.
How's the town? Did that fire spread much?
One building was heavily damaged, but not completely lost. As soon as the fighting was over, everyone rushed to form a bucket brigade and contain the flames. All the townspeople rushed to fight the fire, I should have said. Colonel Talbot had other uses for his men.
Seizing power.
Exactly. He moved quickly to arrest you, and then before Monty and I heard about what was happening, they came for us. It appears that he considers the three of us to be the only real threats to his continued reign in Big Rock.
How many men does he have?
Counting the ones who returned to town with Captain Skinner and the men from the camp who scattered at the first attack but then regrouped later, Well, approximately 35.
35 men. That's not much of an army.
It is when you've gotten the drop on the citizens and managed to disarm most of them. Oh, by sheer force of numbers, there are enough people in town to overcome Talbot and his men, of course. But doing so might mean that quite a few of them would die. And no one is in a hurry to be first in line.
Can't blame them over much for that, I reckon. They came to Big Rock to settle down and lead peaceful, productive lives, not to fight outlaws.
Sometimes fighting has to be done before peace is possible. This has all the makings of one of those occasions.
The two men fell silent for a few minutes.
You know that I didn't actually murder Skinner, don't you?
Of course, I saw what happened. It was the other way around. Skinner was trying to kill you. What you did was purely self-defense.
I reckon I can count on you to testify to that at my trial.
Trial? It'll be no trial, but rather a farce of justice instead. Talbot will pretend to hear testimony from his hand-picked witnesses. And then...
Yeah. He's already decided on having a firing squad.
Why is he going to so much trouble for even a pretense of legality?
You mean instead of shooting me himself? I don't know for sure. But I think it has something to do with him being loco. He's not right in the head, Lewis. If you're around him for very long, you can see that in his eyes. Especially now that he thinks he's got all the power.
Someone like that is more monster than man.
Moe couldn't argue with that sentiment. Monty Carson regained his senses a few minutes later, grabbing hold of the bunk in his cell to help pull himself into a sitting position.
Got a headache?
Ugh, feels like a herd of buffalo stampeding through there. I don't want to open my mouth too much for fear the whole top of my head will fly off.
Yeah, we don't want that. Just sit there for a minute and let it settle down.
I'm locked up in one of my own cells, aren't I?
I'm afraid so.
Monty muttered curses under his breath for several moments and then hauled himself onto the bunk and sat there with his head in his hands. Smoke and Lewis waited patiently, knowing what was coming. After a while, Monty lifted his head and now anger and determination gleamed in his eyes.
Well, boys, what are we gonna do about this?
Did either of you see Pearly this afternoon?
I didn't.
Neither did I. Was he supposed to be in town?
When one of those troopers brought word that Black Drum was attacking the town, I told him to have Skinner swing by my ranch on his way and bring my hands with him. He didn't do it. Maybe he was already thinking about taking advantage of the opportunity to gun me down and didn't want Pearly and the boys at his back when he did it.
If Pearly finds out what's going on, he won't stand by and do nothing. I've known that old boy for too long. He'll be spoiling for a fight.
And I've got a hunch that Bob, Max, and Jed will ride and fight for the brand, too.
That's only four men. They'll be badly outnumbered, Smoke. Almost 4-1.
Yeah, but sometimes all it takes to start a fire is a spark to set it off.
The townspeople. That's what you're talking about.
But before that can happen, somebody will have to get word to Pearly.
You think anybody in town can do that?
I can think of somebody who's probably had the same idea and is going to try.
Sally headed down Center Street toward the livery stable. She knew that Mr. Patterson, the man who owned it, wouldn't mind if she borrowed a horse and a saddle, although she could ride bareback if she needed to. The only thing that was really important now was for her to get to the Sugarloaf so she could tell Pearly and the other men what was happening in town. She wasn't sure what they could do to help, but she knew they were the best hope right now for foiling Colonel Lamar Talbot's deadly schemes. She averted her eyes from the sight of the dead renegade still sprawled in the street. The bodies of the citizens who had been killed had been carried to the undertaker parlor already. That man would be very busy over the next few days, and so would the grave diggers. No one stopped her as she hurried along the street. She reached the livery and saw that the doors were open.
Mr. Patterson? It's Sally Jensen. I need a horse.
There was no response. She hoped Patterson hadn't been injured or worse during the battle. The chances were he was just off somewhere else in town trying to help people. She walked along the wide center aisle, checking the horses in the stalls on both sides, searching for the one that looked like a good saddle mount. She had just decided on a chestnut mare when a hand fell roughly on her shoulder.
Oh! Hold it, lady. What the hell do you think you're doing?
Sally turned her head. One of the troopers stood just behind her. The hard planes of the man's face were beard stubbled. She'd seen enough hard cases to recognize the breed. She knew this man wasn't a real soldier. He was an outlaw, just like the rest of the First Colorado Rifles.
I thought I would go home. But now that the threat from Black Drum is over...
Forget it, lady. Nobody goes in or out of town. Colonel's orders.
But I really need to check on things at the ranch.
Say, you're Jensen's wife, ain't you? The captain had a real yen for you. I think maybe the colonel does, too. And I can sure understand why.
He moved his hand from her shoulder down to her upper arm, squeezing gently.
Oh, keep your hands off me.
His face hardened.
Gonna be stuck up, are you?
He grabbed both of her arms.
Oh!
Maybe we'll find a nice pile of hay in one of these stalls. What the colonel don't know won't hurt.
Sally lifted her knee into his groin as hard as she could. She twisted away and reached for the pitchfork leaned against the gate of a nearby stall. Then she brought it down on the back of the trooper's left thigh, putting all of her weight and strength behind the blow. She ran to the chestnut stall, grabbed the harness that was hanging on the gate, and opened the gate just enough to slide through. She slipped the harness over the horse's head. The animal was a little skittish, but Sally was good at handling horses and calmed her down quickly. She climbed onto the gate and swung from there to the chestnut's back, pulling up her dress so she could ride astride. Then she kicked the gate wide open and charged out past the wounded trooper, who was still writhing on the ground trying to yank the pitchfork tine out of his leg. The chestnut was already moving at a gallop as Sally burst out of the stable. She hauled on the reins, turning the horse to the west. From the corner of her eye, she saw several troopers running toward the stable, drawn by their comrades' screams.
Stop!
Sally leaned forward just in case the men started shooting. They did.
Yeah!
But the chestnut, running smoothly now, never broke stride as Sally raced along the streets, legs bared, hair flying out behind her like a Valkyrie. The light in the cell block was faded, telling Smoke the afternoon was about over and evening was coming on when Colonel Talbot came into the jail, followed by six of the troopers.
All right, Jensen, we're ready to begin your trial.
You mean that farce you're going to put on?
Talbot glared at Smoke.
It will be a proper military trial.
Doesn't the military usually hold a tribunal? Where are the other two judges?
Since I am the only officer present in this command, I will preside over the proceedings.
None of this is legal, and you know it, Colonel.
Talbot's face flushed. He nodded to the men with him. Two of them positioned themselves in front of the doors leading into Monty and Lewis's cells and aimed their rifles at the prisoners.
If you resist, those men will shoot your friends, and these other men will shoot you. You're heading for a firing squad anyway, so if you insist on hurrying matters along...
See, you admit the verdict's already predetermined, and yet you insist this is a real trial you're putting on.
Never mind that. Just come along and don't give us any trouble.
Jump the son of a buck and make him eat his own saber, Smoke. Don't mind about us.
Normally, I'd tell Monty not to volunteer me to be sacrificed, but in this case, he's correct. Don't cooperate with these scoundrels, Smoke.
Sorry, boys. I reckon I'll take my chances.
That's a wise decision, Jensen. There's no reason these two have to die. They'll learn who holds the power here.
Smoke didn't believe that for a second, but he didn't say anything as he left the cell. The troopers fell in around him and escorted him out. Talbot strutted along behind as the soldiers marched Smoke along the street toward Longmont's.
Are you going to have this so-called trial in a saloon, Colonel?
That's right. Seems only appropriate since you and Longmont are friends. Also, it's large enough to accommodate such a proceeding. I considered the school, but it's being used as a hospital.
Something about the way Talbot fell silent prompted Smoke to glance back at him. The colonel was scowling.
Your wife assisted Dr. Spaulding there for a while, as you suggested. But then she got it into her head to flee, although I'm not sure what good she thinks it will do. I gave my men strict orders that no one was to leave town.
Is Sally all right?
She appeared to be fine. She galloped out of town after attacking one of my men and injuring him rather severely. That's the report I got.
As they walked along the street, Smoke noticed quite a few townspeople gathered on the boardwalks, watching anxiously. Each little group had a trooper standing nearby with his rifle ready in his hands. An air of tense expectation gripped the settlement. Talbot had people cowed at the moment, but they might not stay that way. They reached the saloon and went inside. All the tables had been shoved to one side, clearing a large area in front of the bar. Lewis's private table, with its polished hardwood sheen, had been carried forward and placed so that it commanded that open area. Talbot went to the chair behind the table and sat down. Smoke's guard stood him up in front of the table and then backed off a little, but continued covering him with their rifles. Several of Big Rock's leading citizens, including Don Baker from the Mercantile, Haywood Arden, the editor and publisher of the Big Rock Bulletin, and Norman Hogjaw Lambert, owner of Lambert's Cafe, were lined up along the side wall. Talbot nodded to them.
You gentlemen have been brought here to serve as observers, so you can see for yourself, on behalf of the other citizens, that this proceeding is being conducted in a fair and impartial manner. This trial will now begin. Kirby Jensen, you are charged with the murder of Captain Adam Skinner. How do you plead?
Not guilty. I shot Skinner, but only because he was trying to shoot me. I killed him in self-defense.
This is not your time to testify. The first witness will be Sergeant Gerald Rafferty.
The sergeant smirked at Smoke as he stepped forward. Smoke would not get a fair shake from Rafferty, and he knew it.
Sergeant Rafferty?
Yes, sir.
Please tell the court how you saw the accused, Kirby Jensen, murder Captain Adam Skinner in cold blood.
Pearly glanced over his shoulder as he, Bob Dutton, Max Collier, and Jed Hightower galloped toward Big Rock.
Oh.
The sun had dipped below the mountains, and shadows were falling swiftly over the landscape. According to Sally, Talbot had said that Smoke's trial could be this evening. Pearly could only hope that they would reach the settlement in time to prevent his best friend and employer from being stood up in front of a firing squad.
No, not that Smoke would ever let things get that far. Smoke knew he didn't have any way out and was doomed to die. He'd go down fighting one way or another. And he'd probably take a good number of those phony soldiers with him.
Bah. Pearly was not going to let himself think like that. With a little shake of his head, he cleared his brain of such dire possibilities. He and the boys with him would be badly outnumbered, but he planned to make the odds a little better by hitting the jail first and freeing Monte Carson and Lewis Longmont. With those two hombres on their side, he figured that he and the other Sugarloaf hands would be almost a match for that bunch of owl hoods pretending to be soldiers. He was distracted enough by everything going through his head that he didn't see the mounted blue-clad figures charging out of the trees on both sides of the trail until it was too late, and he and his companions were surrounded, forced to rein in sharply because of the rifles leveled at them.
Halt!
Well, I was in the back, near the rear of the column.
So I at first didn't see anything, just the horses in front of me. But then I saw Captain Skinner go down. And so I looked up and I saw that man there holding a pistol. Smoke Jensen.
The parade of liars continued until Talbot had heard half a dozen troopers testifying that Captain Skinner had been firing at the renegades as he led the charge until Smoke cruelly and treacherously blasted him out of the saddle. While that was going on, Smoke glanced at the assembled citizens. He could tell from their expressions that they didn't believe a word of what they were hearing. But outnumbered and outgunned as they were, they couldn't do anything about it without risking their lives.
Very well. I've heard enough. I am ready to render a verdict.
Don't I get a chance to speak for myself?
What are you going to say? Are you going to repeat that ridiculous claim of self-defense, a claim that's been obliterated by the testimony of half a dozen good men and true? If such is the case, I see no need to waste the time listening.
Talbot rose to his feet.
Kirby Jensen, I find you guilty of murder and sentence you to death. Sentence to be carried out immediately by firing squad. Men, take him out and...
Just a moment, please.
The unfamiliar voice came sharply from the saloon's entrance. Smoke looked around to see a blue uniformed figure stride into the room. The newcomer was fairly young, medium-sized, and wore spectacles. He had a determined, intelligent look on his face.
Who the devil are you?
Lieutenant Samuel Brandt.
Talbot glared at the man.
You should address a superior officer as Sir, Lieutenant. A salute would be proper, too.
Certainly. I would salute a superior officer and address him as Sir if I were in the presence of one. However, at the moment, the only person I see is an outlaw and an imposter.
How dare you? How did you get in here? Guards!
Brandt shook his head slowly. Smoke had a feeling that the young lieutenant wanted to smile, but he kept the solemn expression on his face.
If you're calling your men, you're wasting your time. Except for the ones in this room, they've been taken into custody by my men, actual members of the United States Army. You're now my prisoner as well, Colonel.
Wide-eyed and pale, Talbot stood there, staring at the lieutenant. He began to tremble a little, as if something inside him at his very core shook with rage.
So the 1st Colorado Rifles aren't an actual army unit.
They're a self-styled militia. Vigilantes, I suppose you could say, at best. At worst, a gang of outlaws recruited by that man to satisfy his campaign of vengeance against the Indians, as well as looting all the honest people they encounter.
Lies! All lies! Our mission is to battle the savages!
I've conducted an investigation of your activities. You and your men have attacked several peaceful bands of Indians after claiming they were responsible for various atrocities. You whip up sentiment against them, convince settlers to pay you to protect them, and then slaughter innocent men, women, and children.
That's not true! Black Drum was a killer!
Yes, he was. For once, you went after an actual threat to the frontier, and from what I understand, wiped out his war party. That may be taken into account at your trial, but it doesn't excuse your past crimes.
I reckon even a fella who's loco can do some good every once in a while. By accident, if nothing else.
You!
Talbot looked around wildly. He slammed a fist down on the desk.
You're the ones who are insane! All of you! You don't appreciate what I've done to save you from these savages!
You may have saved some people. I'll grant you that. But you couldn't save your own family back in Texas, could you, Talbot?
Kill him!
Talbot clawed at the holstered revolver on his hip.
Kill that liar! That's for you, Jensen!
Smoke leaped forward, guns fired behind him. He smashed into Talbot. Both of them went down. Talbot had cleared leather and he tried to shove the gun against Smoke. Smoke grabbed Talbot's wrist and forced it up. Sparks from the muzzle flash stung Smoke's cheeks. Talbot went limp. Smoke shoved himself up on his left hand and looked down at the false colonel. The bullet had caught Talbot under the chin, bored up through his diseased brain, and exploded out the top of his head. Smoke heaved himself to his feet and looked around. The other guns had fallen silent. A haze of powder smoke hung in the room. Talbot's troopers were down, except for a couple who had thrown away their rifles and stood with their hands in the air. Pearly, Bob Dutton, Max Collier, and Jed Hightower stood just inside the saloon's entrance, bristling with guns as they covered the remaining soldiers. Sally pushed past them and ran towards Smoke.
Oh, Smoke!
Pearly grinned.
I told her to stay behind at the Sugarloaf, Smoke, but I reckon you know how far I got with that. After we ran into Lieutenant Brant and his boys, she caught up with us.
Smoke took Sally into his arms and held her closely against him, for the second time today relishing her nearness and her strength after the tumult of battle. This was what he fought for, heedless. This is what he fought for, heedless of the odds against him. And he always would.
So it was what happened to Colonel Talbot down in Texas when he was a boy that made him turn out the way he was.
Please don't refer to him by that rank, Mr. Jensen. He was never a member of the Army.
Lieutenant Brant shrugged.
Even though it's difficult to say what makes anyone turn out the way they do, I believe that tragedy down in the Brazos had a very large influence on Talbot's obsession with killing Indians.
They were sitting in the lobby of the Dunn Hotel. Sally was beside Smoke on a sofa, and Pearly sat nearby straddling a ladderback chair he had turned around. Monty Carson and Louis Longmont were there, too.
His entire family was wiped out, you said?
That's right. The Comanches raided the family homestead 25 years ago. I found newspaper accounts of the atrocity. His parents were killed at their cabin. His two younger sisters were captured. God only knows their fate.
How did Talbot survive?
He never really said. But given the hatred he felt toward Indians, all Indians, I suspect he hid somehow from the Comanches. He may have known that his sisters were captured, but didn't do anything to help them. From his reaction when I implied as much, I believe something like that must have happened. The guilt he felt drove him mad.
Monty shook his head.
Well, it's over now. He won't be killing any more innocent people or victimizing the folks he pretended to be helping.
And yet, he did help. The Bagbys might have been wiped out if not for Talbot's men. And the same is true for Sally and the crew at the Sugarloaf.
Sally frowned.
I don't like being in debt to such a man, but what Smoke says is true. Black John might have succeeded in burning down the town, too. We actually owe something to Colonel Talbot.
I reckon he's at peace now. That's all the settling up we can do.
Solemn silence hung over the room for a moment before Pearly broke it.
Well, there's a lot of fixing up to take care of here in town and some buryings to get behind us. But once that's done, I figure Big Rock ought to look ahead again instead of thinking about everything that's happened.
That's a good idea, Pearly. What did you have in mind?
Well, I was cogitating on that, and I thought maybe we could have a big old party. A regular celebration of the fact that the town survived and bigger and better things are ahead. Well, there'd be a bunch of food and maybe a dance. We could even get some folks to make speeches. Well, like you, Smoke. Since Big Rock never would have got started in the first place without you, and might not have survived without all you did to get rid of those renegades and that bunch of owl hoots.
Smoke's eyes widened.
Me? Give a speech?
I think that's a grand idea.
I think I'd rather take on a war party again.
Sally wrapped both arms around Smoke's left arm and rested her head on his shoulder.
Besides, it seems to me like that would just be asking for more trouble.
Somehow, Smoke, I have a feeling The trouble will make a habit of cropping up wherever you happen to be.
Smoke Jensen, The Beginning, Book 4, When the Shooting Starts, by William W. Johnstone and J.A. Johnstone, is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2022 by J.A. Johnstone. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2024 Graphic Audio LLC. All rights reserved. Unauthorized download and/or duplication is prohibited. Adapted and directed for Graphic Audio by Bradley Foster Smith. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Primrose Katya Firefly Kirk. Narrated by Mort Shelby. Featuring James Lewis as Smoke, Michael Glenn as Talbot, David M. Jordan as Skinner, Elizabeth Jernigan as Sally, Tim Carlin as Monty, Richard Rowan as Lewis, and Bradley Foster Smith as Pearly. With additional performances by Danny Montooth, Chris Davenport, Jacob Yeh, Jonathan Lee Taylor, Ilyas Khalil, Dylan Lynch, Dan Delgado, David Engel, Steve Winall, Matthew Polly, Daniel Yaka, John Vertulo, Terrence Aselford, Rob Morera, Todd Schofield, Tracy Lynn Oliveira, and Eric Messner. Original music by Vanessa Thurlow. Produced by Colleen Delaney, Scott McCormick, David Zitney, Casey Green, and Aaron Coe. Executive producers Angie Cornett, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. Keep listening to hear preview from Sawbones, Book 2, Never Seen Deader, by William W. Johnstone and J.A. Johnstone. Now available in graphic audio, along with our whole catalog of exciting releases at www.graphicaudio.net.
Knight trudged to where he had left his horse nibbling at a patch of grass. He stashed the spyglass in his saddlebags and put his foot into the stirrup to mount. Distant gunfire and the pounding of horse hooves made him freeze. He pulled himself up and settled into the saddle before searching for the origin of those sounds of battle. Directly south of him, loud whoops suddenly rang out. He edged his horse in that direction, alert for a trap. When he caught sight of the drama playing out across the desert, he almost wheeled around and rode off. Two Indians rode, firing arrows at a cowboy not 20 yards ahead of them. The cowboy swung from side to side, thrusting his revolver out, and getting off wild shots that did nothing to slow the pursuit. Knight knew that hitting anything while firing from horseback was difficult. Shooting over a shoulder as he galloped from two Apaches trying to turn him into a pincushion presented the cowboy an impossible task. He might get lucky and score with one of those wild shots, but from where Knight sat, the man being pursued so aggressively had chased off Lady Luck a lot earlier. Knight drew his rifle from the saddle sheath, levered around into the chamber, and snugged the weapon to his shoulder. He held his horse steady with his knees as he swung smoothly from behind the Indians and then passed them in a slow arc. When he came even with the lead Indian, he squeezed the trigger. His round missed the lead rider, but hit the second, jolting him halfway around even though he didn't fall from the racing pony. The cowboy was out of luck, but Knight's was damned good at the moment. He had only winged the Apache, but that was enough to cause the warrior to veer away from the chase. Although he'd even the odds, Knight realized the luck still rested with him. The fleeing cowboy's bullets all but ran out. The Apache still had a quiver filled with arrows. Judging by the smooth pluck, draw, and fire, the warrior had a good chance to skewer his quarry.
Oh, hell. Yeah! Yeah!
Knight spurred his horse down the sandy slope and across the sun-baked desert in pursuit. Head down, riding like the wind, he closed the gap between him and the Indian. As he galloped closer, Knight saw this was no young buck on his first raid. He was facing a grizzled veteran of too many ambushes and battles. The Indian brought his horse to a dead halt, drew back on his bow, and let an arrow fly. It spun a little as it flew toward Knight. The fletching on one side was torn off, and the unstable flight sent the arrow angling to the right, away from him.
Whoa!
Knight hauled back on the reins, his horse kicking up a cloud of dust as he duplicated the Indian's ploy. On a stationary mount, he had a better chance of making a killing shot. Fortune still favored Knight. The rifle slug tore through the Apache's head and knocked him clean off his horse. Knight levered in another round as he heard a horse galloping for him. He lowered the rifle when he saw the frantic cowboy waving at him.
Thanks for listening to this graphic audio production. Graphic Audio has over 1,700 titles to choose from. Listen to over 225 binge-worthy series. We feature titles in genres like science fiction, fantasy, romantasy, westerns, mystery thrillers, comics, and more. Check out our exclusive series such as Deathlands, Rogue Angel, Outlanders, Tangent Knights, and Agent of Exiles, which are only available in our dramatized adaptation format. Experience a radically different type of audiobook produced with a full cast, sound effects, and cinematic music. Listen to a movie in your mind, on the go, anytime, anywhere. Our dramatized adaptation titles are available at all major audiobook retailers and platforms. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and other social media platforms. For more information and samples of all our titles, visit our website at graphicaudio.net.